This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. Howard Gordon is a TV writer-producer who's made a specialty out of telling unusual stories in unusual ways. He wrote and produced for The X-Files, wrote scripts for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, and Beauty and the Beast, and was executive producer of 24, the high-speed, often highly controversial adventures of counter-terrorist agent Jack Bauer. His latest series, the Showtime drama Homeland, which started this month, also deals with terrorism and counter-terrorist investigators. But this time, we aren't sure, at least initially, who's the true hero of the story. In this scene from the pilot, CIA officer David Estes, played by David Harewood, is briefing agents on the results of a mission in Afghanistan, which led to the discovery and rescue of a prisoner of war who was missing and presumed dead for years. The rescued prisoner is Nicholas Brody, played by Damian Lewis. But while watching the video of Brody at the briefing, one CIA agent, Carrie Matheson, speaks up with a question. She's played by Claire Danes.
I'm an American.
Turns out he's one of ours.
Marine Sergeant Nicholas Brody, MIA since early 2003 and presumed dead. Until now.
What happened to his partner? Brody was a scout sniper. They work in pairs. Corporal Thomas Walker also went missing that day.
According to Sergeant Brody, Walker was killed during their captivity. But that shouldn't dampen what is a major win for the agency and for everyone in this room. You should all take a moment. Give yourselves a big hand. Because of you, an American hero is coming home.
What makes Homeland so unusual and so dramatic is that Brody is either a hero or, as Carrie suspects, a double agent who was turned by Al-Qaeda. While Carrie acts with certitude, others aren't so sure, and unlike Jack Bauer on his missions in 24, she could be dead wrong. Our TV critic David Bianculli spoke with Homeland co-creator Howard Gordon last week, days before the program's premiere.
Howard Gordon, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here.
How much time was there between the ending of 24, in terms of your working on it, and your deciding that Homeland was going to be your next project?
Well, in typical Hollywood fashion, I was halfway through the season on 24, and Rick Rosen, who was my agent, represents this Israeli company called Keshet, which actually produced the HBO show In Treatment. And Rick had come back from Israel on a trip visiting his clients and said, I have your next show. So this was an Israeli format. And I said, you know, again, I was so distracted with 24, I said, sure, sounds great, and kind of signed on blindly. And Alex Gonza, my old friend and writing partner and someone who was working on 24 at the time, I chatted with him and we wound up saying, yeah, let's maybe do this together. It would be fun.
Now, when you signed on for American Rights for it, or to adapt it for America, did it even exist yet as a television program, or was it still in script form?
In Israel, it had been, the first 10 scripts had been written and were actually being shot at the time we took it on as an adaptation. But it really does bear very little similarity to its Israeli version. It's really about two guys who were POWs for a very long time and come back. There were three, two of them come back. And it really is more of a Rip Van Winkle story that was very specific to that country and to the residences of Gilad Shalit and the sensitivity, you know, that's very specific and idiosyncratic to an Israeli audience, that really, because we don't have POWs, or at least none that we know of, or very few of them, it's not a national issue for us. And so we created this character and this ongoing implication of a returning soldier. So there was something of it that really we took from it that was valuable, but we really recreated an entire layer that made it a thriller. Where
so,
before it wasn't.
Was that the most compelling thing about it for you, was the idea of using the POW experience?
The character of Nicholas Brody, a returning veteran, someone who actually had been presumed dead and was now discovered alive 10 years later, was just a really compelling idea for us to ask a lot of questions about the war, the wars, and our response to what happened 10 years ago and how our world has changed, and who better than a returning warrior to explore some of those issues. I mean, it goes back to Odysseus and the Iliad, and you know, the returning warrior is a staple in literature, and frankly, we were stunned that it wasn't on the air or hadn't really been treated in movies in a way that we felt it needed to be treated. We think the long frame of, Alex and I both talked about this at length, and it really kind of needed a more novelistic approach than even a movie could accommodate. So we loved that character, and we loved the idea reciprocally of a hero on the other side of the table who was trying to stop some bad thing from happening, who herself was unreliable, who herself, you know, whose own account and whose own fears might or might not be valid. Very different from Jack Bauer.
Let's play a clip the first time that they were on opposite sides of a table from the premiere episode of Homeland. It's the first time that the returning POW, Marine Sergeant Nicholas Brody, comes face-to-face with CIA officer Carrie Matheson. Everyone else at the debriefing, including her boss, played by David Harewood, sees Brody as a hero, but Carrie suspects he may be a traitor, and after a softball introduction, questions him accordingly. Damian Lewis plays Brody. Claire Danes plays Carrie.
My name is Carrie Matheson. I served as a case officer in Iraq. Your picture was on our MIA wall. I saw it every day for 5 years. It's good to meet you in person.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm sorry we were unable to find you sooner.
I appreciate that.
I'd like to start with the first few days of your captivity, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
How soon after you were taken did the interrogations begin?
Pretty much right away.
What did they want to know?
Anything I could tell them about U.S. ground operations? Supply routes, communication codes, rules of engagement.
When you were debriefed in Germany, you said you gave up no such information.
My SEER training was excellent.
And Corporal Walker?
Ma'am?
Did he give anything up?
We were never interrogated together, so I don't know.
But still, you must have wondered, especially after you learned of his death.
I'm assuming there's a point to all this, Carrie.
Oh, there is, sir. As you know, the first 72 hours after a soldier's capture are critical. What he knows can be used by the enemy during that period to devastating effect. The point is, Sergeant Brody stopped being a source of actionable intelligence fairly quickly, and yet he was kept alive for almost 8 more years. I'd like to ask him if he knows why.
I often wondered that myself.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Howard Gordon, one of the executive producers and writers of the new Showtime drama series Homeland. Can you talk about the subtlety of the acting and the reacting in that clip?
Well, it's a very tricky and very high-stakes game of poker that's happening here because Carrie has got this suspicion that she's not shared with her superiors. So she can't show her hand. He obviously cannot show his to the extent that he has one, although we do learn in a privileged point of view that he has a memory that shows that he's lying. So as it turns out, the hunted and the hunter and, you know, are at the same time very much alike as people. Psychologically, they're both very broken people. They're both veterans of the same war, and they're both damaged. But the two of them are just spectacular. I mean, we pinch ourselves every day to have Damian and Claire heading up the cast.
I've previewed the first three episodes, and for the first three episodes, except for a scene or two, Brody and Carrie are kept apart, and yet they are so together for those first three episodes because she sets up surveillance equipment and watches him, and he's usually alone. So they're sharing this alone time together. I thought that was not only a fascinating structure, but clearly one that you had to do intentionally and for a reason. So what's the reason?
Well, the reason was to develop a sort of lopsided intimacy from Carrie. Carrie is this person who's given up the idea of having a family, let alone even a loving relationship. And as she watches and invades the privacy, and by the way, the constitutionally guaranteed privacy of this family, she winds up becoming attached in a very voyeuristic way. And, you know, Alex and I discussed some inspirations like, Rear Window and The Lives of Others and The Conversation. That really was it. And what's the price of this invasion of other people's privacy? What does it do to the watcher?
There are a couple of scenes where she is watching something on surveillance. I don't want to say what it is, but where she decides that she doesn't want to watch it anymore and literally turns the monitor away so she can't see it. And it is during the scenes where Brody is with his wife, played by Marina Baccarin, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly.
That's right.
And it is when they are the most intimate. They're in the bedroom. Carrie has installed a camera in there. So we are seeing what I think we are meant to believe is the only time where Brody really lets his guard completely drop is when he is having physical relations with his wife. But these relations, it's an emotional intimacy, not just physical. And sometimes it's more violent, it's more distant, and it's creepy. But viewers are still voyeuristically drawn into the same scene. And it sort of makes us complicit in a way that I thought Alfred Hitchcock used to do. And again, what are the lines that you're trying to draw about how the audience is supposed to perceive this and accept it and want to see or not see these different images and scenes?
Yeah, well, you're hitting exactly on something that Alex and I talked about at length, that this really is a series about perception. And in some ways, you know, frames how people are framing other people with their expectations. And of course, at the biggest level, here's Nicholas Brody, who's greeted by the public, and he's on inside the frame of the television as this great hero home from the hill who actually is groomed for political office later. So he's this charismatic, perfect family with this dramatic story. From the privacy of Carrie's voyeuristic, you know, invasion of their privacy, we're seeing this awful drama unfold in the privacy. I think the thing you're referring to is a very uncomfortable, you know, we created about as uncomfortable a moment as one can imagine, that you feel yourself wanting to turn away but compelled to stay watching. And so the audience is complicit, as you described, in this voyeurism as well. So we also are treated to these subjective views of Nicholas Brody imagining or remembering his own past and filling in for us the story of what happened to him while he was there, while he was a captive. But is that real, or is that, you know, how reliable is memory itself? So it really is about perception, about perspective, and about this, where are the fault lines between all those points of views?
Our guest is Howard Gordon, one of the executive producers and writers of Homeland, a new drama series on the Showtime cable network. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, our guest is Howard Gordon, one of the executive producers and writers of the new Showtime drama series, Homeland. The idea of a man coming back after being totally isolated from civilization and from America for so many years, it plays on two levels. In the pilot, you have a very rare laugh being shared by Brody and his daughter, and the wife is standing outside the door totally amazed and confounded about what they might be laughing about. And when they talk the next day, he's talking about something that she showed him on YouTube, and it was about a dog talking about a meal.
Right, right. Well, I mean, part of the fun of this, and whatever fun there is the idea of kind of a Rip Van Winkle. I mean, it's a guy who's been out of this country for the time. I mean, he didn't even know the name of the vice president. And he tells that to his buddies at the platoon. He goes, there I was shaking his hand. I didn't even know his name. And he talks about YouTube. And at one point he said, what is this Facebook thing? I mean,
yeah.
So there is some fun. And I think it's not a tragic thing, but it's one of the things we talked about a couple times.
What are American TV viewers ready for now in this subject? What do you most want to explore politically?
Well, Alex and I really thought about this again. We thought, obviously, we want to make a compelling and entertaining thriller first and foremost. But there were a lot of ideas that we felt we wanted to accommodate. And again, none of them, we didn't want them to be a polemic or at all propaganda or try to use this as a platform to make any points, except that the world after 9/11 and 10 years after these two wars and after we've revised and adapted the way we conduct our wars and our image abroad, those are questions, you know, that are very complex. What does it mean to be a hero? What's the price of war? Why are we fighting? What are we fighting for? How are we treating our veterans? What do we have to be afraid of? And those were questions that don't have any easy answers. So we just wanted to ask a lot of questions, and questions that say, you know, during 24, things seemed a little clearer. Our fear was a little more pitched, and our idea of who was good and who was bad, you know, a little, you know, maybe a little clearer. But at the same time, that was 10 years ago.
Now that you can step back from 24 and look over it as a whole, what about that show in terms of its reactions from the audience, from the media, from columnists, surprises you the most? Was it, you know, the reaction to the politics, to the polarization, to the popularity?
Yeah, I have a lot of reactions to it, and some of them are really were wonderful, and some were, I felt, unfortunate and frankly unfair. But the show became a kind of inkblot and a Rorschach test. Well, for instance, the allegations that we were somehow handmaids to a national policy condoning torture, that was the most vexing one. I mean, the show, after all, was a thriller. And I think if you looked at Arnold Schwarzenegger movies or Bruce Willis or Clint Eastwood, roughing up a suspect is a staple of this genre. And suddenly, mm-hmm. you know, I think, unfortunately, the unfortunate events of Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo made what was a very strong wish fulfillment that Jack represented, a guy who's just going to cut through it and stop the bad guys from hurting innocent people, became cluttered by, or I should say distorted by current events. And I think, unfortunately, there was a conflation with some of the people behind the scenes on the show's politics by the media, and they came to sort of, I think, read into it and do a deconstruct the show in ways that I really think, if you look at it, I could match point by point, were, you know, unfair. I think at, you know, 24 also, you know, it was a hot button show. It really did, you know, it did inspire a lot of passion, and it's inspired a lot of criticism from people. What amazed me always was that people across the aisle, whether it was, you know, Barbara Streisand and Bill Clinton, or, you know, Rush Limbaugh and John McCain, were all tremendous fans of the show. Michael Chertoff, who was our former Secretary of Homeland Security, put it best to me when he said, you know, Jack Bauer really reflected some truth because in terms of what we do here in Homeland Security, because there aren't any really good choices. There are just the better of two bad choices. And I think that was really where that show lived. And in some ways, it's where the show Homeland lives as well.
And one last question. What's the current status of the 24 movie?
I knew you were going to ask me that. The current status of the 24 movie is,
I will ask you that until there is a 24 movie.
They are moving. I'll tell you something. We all want there to be a 24 movie. So I think all the people who are invested in it, including the studio, wants this to happen. I know Kiefer does. I know I do. There is a script in development. I think it's going to be finding, Kiefer now has a show coming out, so it's going to be finding the right, you know, the right script at the right time. But I will say it's definitely a work in progress, and I hope we have something to report soon.
Well, Howard Gordon, thanks for being on Fresh Air.
Thank you so much, David.
Howard Gordon, co-creator of the new Showtime drama Homeland, speaking with our TV critic David Biancooley. David's founder and editor of TVWorthWatching.com and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey.